Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm in the studio representing the political center, and I'm so happy to be with my co-host, Dan McKay, hi. On the right.
Hey, Natalie, how are you?
And we are so excited to welcome longtime co-host Jim DeBacchus back into the studio on the left.
Well, I found the studio finally. It kept changing where it was. I found it.
So we are excited to talk about issues. Jim, tell us a little bit about where you've been, just because you've been away from the show for a little while.
Oh, I've just been wandering around aimlessly.
Pilgrim.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we'll
talk on social media.
Yeah, I see a lot of progressive Utah things popping around.
Yes, yeah. I get his emails.
I just do the swipe left to delete.
As long as you're swiping left, I'm okay with that.
I swipe left with Jim.
We're at 63,000 people at Utah Progressives on our way to 100,000.
Yeah. Jim, after
12 in Utah.
After you aren't selected in an election, you can go a lot of places. Any regrets?
Oh, not one.
Really?
I mean, I am.
That sounds like the Jim DeBacchus I know.
You know, I did 8 years. I threw my soul into it. The voters decided to go a different way. I don't blame them. You know, sometimes the people know better, and I'm just off to the next grand adventure, and that's it.
I have to say, wonderful candidates were in the Salt Lake City mayor's race. It was so good for the public. So
yeah.
Thank you for your willingness to be on the ballot. Even though I'm not a city resident.
I think this is the most talented pool that we've seen in an election in the state in a long time.
Yeah.
Like, if you look back at this mayoral candidate race, I think there were a lot of very talented people that were in the race, including those who made the primary, those who did not make the primary. And it's interesting to watch, you know, the process is what the process is. And, you know, two very good candidates are forward, and we're going to have a good mayor, I think.
It is my hopeful hope that some of the candidates end up in the administration.
Oh,
so we'll see.
Yeah, a little
or
team of rivals thing.
That some of them join in and join into the Utah governor's race and run on the Democratic ticket. Any thought of that, Jim?
Are you crazy?
I can understand after being through an election, but it's amazing what you can do to influence the debate to just be in the arena.
I think here's what's going to happen. There's no Democrat that's going to run. I just don't see it.
Like, no one runs.
Well, no, somebody will run, but it'll be.
Wow.
Here's what I.
That is so unhealthy.
Why? Why is that unhealthy? Because the Democrats don't have a shot anyway. What I see happening though is the Democrats all, as a force, getting together, having their own little online convention, and deciding who in mass they're going to support. Registering as Republicans and deciding who's going to be the next Republican governor. I see that happening.
It means the governor's race ends on June 30th, if I'm remembering the primary date right.
Yeah.
It does anyway, though,
sure.
Just to be honest. But, you know, Jim, I think it really is disappointing when an ideology, a political point of view, is not represented in the election, let's say, all the way through November.
Why?
They'll have somebody there. I mean, somebody will be there. They just won't spend any money on the race. I think that's what Jim's saying.
It needs to be someone who can, have that voice.
Michael Weinhold spent $4 million, didn't move the needle a bit over the previous one. It was a total waste. Those $4 million should have gone into legislative races and other races.
Okay, so
and
here's
it's
my
just
point.
A waste.
Don't spend the money, but be a high-quality candidate that's in the debates and that is in the media.
Well, anybody could do that, Jim. I mean,
I'm not saying that they have to come in and spend their fortune. I'm just saying that whoever emerges on the Republican side needs a quality challenger to make them better.
The only one they're going to get is in the Republican primary, which is why that's where Democrats have to get involved.
And that's where it's interesting that Jim says this, right? So it will be, this is an interesting debate that is actually an issue we're trying to research and understand right now. So we've divided our presidential primary from the, it's happening earlier in the year. I think it's on Super Tuesday, right? Mm-hmm. So we're having our presidential primary on Super Tuesday, and then our regular primary date in August.
Yeah.
And so everybody's like, well, can you be switching parties back
and
forth? Late June.
Okay,
sorry.
I just wanted to make sure I'm tracking that.
Municipals,
right before the 4th of July.
Municipals
June
30th. Are August, and you're right, it's June. So the question is, should someone who votes as a Democrat in the presidential primary then be able to vote in the June primary as a Republican? And Jim says yes. And I'm not sure everybody agrees with that.
You know what?
Well, because if Jim, you're going to ask your people to forfeit Utah's voice in the Democratic candidate nomination for president.
Exactly. I easily give that up in order to decide who's going to be our next governor for the next 4 years.
And if, all I can say is it's not a good sign for the Utah Democratic Party if they can't field a high quality candidate in the gubernatorial
let's
election.
Field one knowing we're going to lose. And have the influence of power where we can have it. Because I'm going to tell you, it makes a lot of difference for the state of Utah who the next governor is going to be, because it may well be 8 years or beyond, and great damage or great vision can happen. And I'll tell you, we've gone that route.
So who do you like, then? This is interesting. Should we segue into the governor's race?
I don't mind.
I didn't know this is where Jim was going, so I'm in, right? Jim, who do you like? Who should Democrats?
I have thought David Garbett would be a great candidate on the Democratic side because he's articulate, well informed, did better than a lot of people expected in the Salt Lake City mayor's race, and he would give a strong foil. Yeah. I don't know, maybe the people don't like me using that word, but it's this idea to give that competition on air quality issues, on
public
land issues.
It's the counterbalance of ideas, right? If a campaign is going to be about something, about ideas, or about the future of Utah, it needs to have the other side. Every debate.
And I think Jim would be a great candidate in that regard as well.
Could never happen.
no names. I interrupted. Well, he asked you, and then I answered.
I'm just saying, I want to know who all the candidates are, first of all. Is John Huntsman going to be in or not? I want to know what's in Spencer Cox's soul. Is he a suck-up Gary Herbert going to run that money machine the way that Herbert did in A Place to Embarrassment? Or is he going to be his own person, stand up, have his own values, and not be the... Herbert's...
I've got to say on that point, though, Spencer Cox sent an email out that said, passing the torch, that was the subject line, and he explained how he's different than Governor Herbert and how it's a different time, and he started to delineate some of his policies. So that signaled to me that he's his own guy.
He also... But when it came, push came...
It was after he got the $50,000 check.
That's what I was going to say. When the push came to shove... That sleazeball pot of corporate money and favors that of millions of dollars that Herbert has built up from all of his cronies and people that work with the state, Cox took that money. And I want to know, is he going to do the same thing? Is he going to have all these conferences and governor's thing on this and hit them all up and talk to everybody that's doing contracts? That's going to be the big legacy of Gary Herbert. He turned this money-making, pay-to-play into part of the system. Is it going to end now, or is that just going to be the legacy for governors from now on? And I don't know where Cox is on that.
Interesting. Dan, this is where I can really disagree with Jim on at least the legacy of Governor Herbert, because Governor Herbert's legacy will absolutely be shouldering, shepherding, being a steward of a strong economy. He's had the longest sustained expansion in our state's history under his watch, and he brought it out of the depths of the Great Recession.
Yeah, and if you look at the progress the state has made, if Jim wants to talk about, you know, being progressive or those kinds of things, Governor Herbert has really been, if you look back on where he's been on policy, he really has been one that has been trying to drive at least
the productive middle.
The productive middle. And honestly, everybody was afraid that he was going to be this hard right guy. And honestly, he hasn't been that guy, much to some disappointment and to the cheering of the others, right?
He and his wife ran a private daycare for many, many years. That's the productive middle, right? You see a lot of families in need. You see a lot of diverse families. Sure. I don't know. I think it's part of his DNA to relate to people.
Look, it's been a disaster. You can't give the governor credit for the national economy and what's happened with interest rates and from Obama and whatever. That's fine. But you subtract the national part of it. And if that's his legacy, look, he says education is the number one issue. Utah moved from 50th, maybe to 49th. Nothing has been done. A lot of money is gone. It hasn't moved us. Give me one major initiative on cleaning up air. Not done. Solving public lands. The big issues. He's been a snoozer. He hasn't done anything. And this corporate money in collecting, remember his pay to play, like you get 20 minutes and you pay $20,000. This is a terrible legacy that he will have set. This man, it's good that he is retiring off to Utah County or wherever he's going.
Dan on the right, I'm just going to give you the last word. Whether it's to speak about Governor Herbert's legacy or Spencer Cox being his own man or the Democrats fielding a candidate.
Okay. I am going to say this because Jim is he's fresh off retirement, so we're bringing him in. He's a little rusty. He doesn't really get the whole picture, and
he's
so
pent up. Got pent up demand.
Right. I'm just going to say, Governor Herbert. If you look over his administration, I think one, he's going to be known for the economy. Two, there are no scandals on Governor Herbert, and at the end of the day, he has been a what I think is a strong executive presence, with
steady,
with very
devoted, hardworking.
Yeah, with, you know, the scandal element of Gary Herbert's administration, I don't think anybody that knows Gary Herbert as governor or as a person thinks he's dishonest or that he's got there's some scandal. That isn't Gary Herbert. So, Jim.
How many scandals do you want me to list in the next 30 seconds? I mean, this man is. The problem is Republicans don't call them scandals anymore. We just have accepted them. It's kind of like Trump. So when the governor's budget director, who's making $170,000 a year, is running a part-time business out of the budget director's office and then having government agencies pay a fee to take her software and listen to her lectures. Oh, no, that's not a scandal. That's just working. And that's on and on and on. What about when he took away the contract from the winner of the construction when he was first, when he was right after he was elected, took away the contract and gave it to his buddies from Utah County? Do we need to just go on and on and on?
No, you can stop there because you can take the most innocuous activities and, you know, make it sound like they're horrible. Kristen Cox, for example, you want to go at Kristen? You are in the wrong world, in my opinion. Kristen, at the end of the day, is doing a lot for the state of Utah to make the state run better. Now, I'll say this. I understand where you're coming from. You prefer a state employee chained to their desk in a dark, dank room, and they do nothing else creatively with themselves or anyone else on social media, and they don't bother with like being successful outside of sitting at that government chained desk. That being said, I have a different vision for what I think our government people should be doing.
If a normal employee at the unemployment were doing this,
I really miss Jim.
Running a private business out of their office, they would be fired immediately. This is not allowed. It's not good. And it scares me to the shivers that so many legislators and the governor agree with Dan. There's no room for this.
I'll just say from the political middle that we can always do better. But yes, in Kristen Cox's case, she's very innovative, has focused on, you know, improving management excellence in state government, and that will be her legacy. And I'm sure she's passing these ethics tests.
She's not. You're sure.
So we're listening to both sides of the aisle. We got Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Want to go through a bit of national news really quickly, guys. What are you making about all this enthusiasm and public, commentary about climate change during Climate Week? Are you guys watching that, seeing that?
The only thing I have seen, because granted, you know, I've been out ruining the environment. The only thing I have seen is there was a 12-year-old girl at a
16.
Rally. She's 16? I'm sorry. Everybody looks younger nowadays. Anthony, our producer, looks like he's 15. I'm not going to lie. The guy has a beard. You know, there's no reason why he'd be 15.
Looks like a Halloween beard.
So, but, you know, I will say that type of propaganda, I think, with kids is dangerous. And I will say, I think it backfires. My bet is some of the rhetoric that's going on this week, it will backfire.
Jim, what are you seeing?
Well, let's bring it home a little bit. We have got to provoke the elected officials in the state of Utah to do something. They have been listening to those little wacky members of their caucus for too long. The state has yet to have a serious discussion about climate change and how it's going to affect Logan to St. George. We're counting on the mighty Colorado. I had a proposal that would have hired the National Science Foundation and joined some other states in saying, what is the 20-year future of the Colorado River? It didn't even get out of committee. I'm telling you, we need this kind of pressure. That brave little 16-year-old girl maybe will have an effect. We're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on a Bear River diversion, on the St. George pipeline, without looking at the underlying issue on how climate change is going to affect this state. And all the Republicans go crawling into their little, put their heads in the warming sand and refuse to talk about it because of the political consequences of the wackos in their party. You know what? Do something while there's time to do something. The minimum that ought to happen while Governor Herbert is off on another taxpayer-paid junket to Japan, Governor, come up with a commission, a serious scientific commission. Look at the effect that this is going to have over the next generation. Have the guts to do that so you have some kind of a legacy other than pay to play.
I have, from the political middle, more optimism than Jim does. I'm seeing all sorts of amazing things happen in our state, whether it's Rocky Mountain Power, Dominion Energy, some of the solar companies, all doing amazing things to get us to a carbon-free future. They see it. They understand it.
You see a lot of industry. So it is as predicted, right? I will say this. Man, I can't remember how many years ago this was, but I said the number one driver of what will change automotive, like fuel consumption, will be people showing up on the lot and asking for more fuel-efficient cars. Mm-hmm. That will have a greater effect than government regulation or whatever it is. And you're seeing it happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at new car surveys. Most people that are shown at the lot, the first thing they're asking about is, you know, consumption and energy conservation, that kind of stuff. One.
Yeah.
Two, you're going to see the same thing from all of these other industries where you see the market is now, and I will say largely, Jim, it is to loud people complaining about one thing or another who I think are helping change or influence the public's mind and is making the conversation better. I will say what Jim is proposing will be far too extreme, and he hasn't proposed anything, but yeah, it'll be far too extreme, and I will be far too reluctant.
Dan, one of the things I always enjoy when Jim's in the studio is the ability to talk about Eastern Europe in a more intelligent way, and it's because of your experience there. And I realize the Ukraine is very different from Russia, but, you know, they're neighbors and all that kind of thing. Jim, what's your thought about this conversation that Trump had on the phone where he apparently, withheld funds to put pressure on the Ukrainian president to investigate Joe Biden's son?
He needs to be impeached. No, I mean, this is what ought to happen.
So I want to just ask this. So there is a transcript, apparently, of these calls with foreign leaders, and I understand why they wouldn't want to release it because that's a bad precedent. Can't they march that, Dan and Jim, up to Capitol Hill to the Foreign Relations Committee or the Armed Services Committee, I don't know what the names are, and let our elected officials hear it and decide whether it's an impeachable offense?
Well, and the crazy thing is, right, so none of us know the transcript. There's a whistleblower. There's a conversation. Apparently, the whistleblower did not hear the conversation. They heard it second, it's hearsay from somebody else. That being said, whatever the transcript says is whatever the transcript says. That said, the report wasn't filed and it wasn't made public until just a couple days ago. And the money had already been funded like 2 weeks before that.
Mm-hmm.
So, is this Trump being Trump? Is this some nuance in a conversation that was misunderstood? I don't know.
This is where I count but on our elected leaders, the Utah congressional delegation and others, to see something that the rest of us can't see, but to help make a good decision about
it. And one of them stood up. And one of them cowered over the brown-nosing little reptile and who stands next to Trump no matter what, without knowing the facts, without knowing what's going on.
So Senator Romney stood up.
Senator Romney stood up and said, if this happened, this is outrageous. And the ... afterwards, at least in my head, was, and he ought to be impeached. You got that sniveling Stewart who, since he didn't get the Senate seat and wanted to be the Air Force Secretary, is constantly Trump's lapdog on Fox saying things that I think are embarrassing to his constituents, certainly to a third of his constituents that are in Salt Lake City. He was back on Monday, back on Fox once again, without knowing what the facts are. He's on the Intelligence Committee, and he doesn't even want to know what was in that conversation.
Yeah,
Mr. Stewart, country before Trump.
Joe Biden. So he was the topic of this Ukrainian thing, but he's coming to town. Another presidential candidate. He'll be here on Saturday, as I understand it.
Sleazy.
What do you mean there? Do you get an invitation to be there?
You know what? This is another one of those. How many of these things that have I gone to? They get in their SUV at what used to be Millionaire Airport. They zoom up. They give their 20 minutes. They leave with $200,000 or $400,000. They're on a drive-by. It's insulting to the people of Utah, and I've had it. If you want to come to Utah, Joe Biden or anybody else, you sit there, you meet with real working class Democrats, and don't just use us as an ATM. I'm sorry, Joe, but that's the old politics. That's the old way that it's done. I have no interest in that. Compare that to Elizabeth Warren, who spent 4 hours the other day getting selfies as she did when she was in Salt Lake. You know what? This old brand of politics and pleasing this small group of big moneyed people needs to be over. And Joe, you better clean this up.
So you're in favor of Elizabeth Warren style, but not in favor of Joe Biden. Did I get that correctly?
It's the broader issue about who you're beholden to.
Yeah.
To take Mitch McConnell and turn it into the Democrats getting all the power with all their special interests doesn't help the country a bit. And so that's why I certainly am a lot closer. I'm for Elizabeth Warren. And Joe, I love you. You're revered. You were a great vice president, but you're just the same old, except on the Democrat side.
Interesting. I will say this one positive thing, if you were to contrast the two candidate styles. I do think Elizabeth Warren is the candidate to beat right now in the presidential race. The energy is heading that direction. To Jim's point, I actually think she does a very good job of being a real person.
I've not been able to really connect with her, but
yeah, well,
I'll watch.
It's hard for me. I mean,
I don't connect with Trump either. I'm politically homeless in this presidential election.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
I don't know. Hey,
we'll build you a shelter.
I went up to the Capitol this week and saw a press conference that was held. Lieutenant Governor Cox was there. The University of Utah was there. Intermountain Healthcare was there. Representative Ellison was there. Others. But it was this $2 million suicide prevention campaign the legislature helped fund. And now the private sector has ponied up some matching monies. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah.
Just a good place to kind of end the program before we go to gripes. Did you support the legislation, Dan?
Yep, I did. Yeah. Okay. We're making a lot of positive steps there.
They gave a lot of statistics that were very frustrating to hear about Utah's place in particularly in youth suicide. Wondered if I'd just give each of you a chance to say, what would you be doing, Jim?
It's a good thing. I think it has to come from a community perspective that supports young people regardless of parental and societal acceptance, whether it's because they're gay or they're smoking or they are out of the norm in some way. You know what? Love your kid. That's the first great commandment. It's not drag them to what you want. It is love them unconditionally. And if we did that in our schools and in our communities, I think that's a way to cut down on
a lot of this. I saw a nice piece by the Joint Economic Committee on Social Capital where they basically said the most important element of social capital is the family. Dan, from you on youth suicide prevention?
I'm with Jim because I do think, you know, I will say, I don't know if it was like this for you growing up, but for my household, it was, we were high love, low expectations. Right?
Mine was high love, high expectations.
High love, high expectations, right? And Jim, you're probably what?
Low, no expectations and so love.
Okay, so. Yeah.
So I mean, all have a little different
upbringing. Yeah, a little bit different thing, right? I think we have got to be more like Natalie's house, and I'm trying to do this all the time in my own house, where we are high love and high expectations. You can't have one without the other. And so that's what I would say. The best suicide prevention will be within the home and will be within the parents and the siblings caring for each other. I think that is the number one thing.
Yeah. Jim, did you come loaded for a gripe?
My gripe is Rob Bishop, don't run for governor.
Okay. Wow.
Okay.
So my gripe is the Salt Lake City Mormon versus anti-Mormon thing downtown that constantly goes on. The Rocky thing's out. Senator Escamilla put a blog post on her blog about Rocky's comments, you know.
Enough, she said. Yeah, this is bigotry.
This is old. This is lame. But I realized, like, it's been happening for so long. I mean, you realize the city-county building. You look at the city-county building and how nice it is, and it's beautiful downtown. Do you realize that its original thought was they wanted that to become the architectural masterpiece and not the LDS temple downtown? You realize that's the beginning of the architectural thought for the city-county building. So this anti-Mormon, Mormon thing has been just going on for a long time in Salt Lake City. Let's just end it. Let it go.
I will just say it's pledge drive and encourage our listeners to go to kcpw.org and make a donation. Show your support for both sides of the
aisle. Give us money.
I'm Natalie Gochner with Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you for listening.